Thank you, Ed, and good afternoon, everyone. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce Richard Davis to the Forum Club. Richard is a good friend and a business colleague that I've known for over two decades. He is one of four chairmen and CEOs that I had the opportunity to work with during the 22 years I spent as a director of U.S. Bank. If you're not familiar with U.S. Bank, it is the fifth largest bank in the United States, with only Citicorp, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo being larger. Richard took his first job in banking when he was 18 years old, as he worked his way through college at Cal State Fullerton. And I believe he's the only major head of a U.S. bank that started his career as a teller. His timing of becoming chairman and CEO at U.S. Bank was absolutely exquisite, right before the subprime mortgage crisis. And I think he'll probably have something to say about that during his remarks or the Q&A. Over the years, he's received numerous accolades and awards, including being named the Twin Cities Executive of the Year and American Banker's Banker of the Year in 2010. He's always felt that core values and ethics were very important, and it was only fitting that in 2015, he was named as one of 100 most important people in business ethics. When he retired from executive chairman at U.S. Bank Corp. in 2018, he called me and he said, "What should I do?" I said, "Take your time." And he did, and he ultimately, after being approached by a number of commercial and nonprofit organizations, decided he would join Make-A-Wish America as the president and CEO. I'll tell you much more about Make-A-Wish in a moment, but you should know that it is one of very few nonprofit organizations to receive a 4 out of 4 star rating from the world's largest nonprofit evaluator, Charity Navigator. As an aside, according to Jim Clifton, the chairman of Gallup, Richard is the only person to have ever been CEO of a Fortune 500 company and CEO of a major nonprofit institution. He served on many boards, and he's currently a director of Dow Chemical, MasterCard, Mayo Clinic, Scholars Finance, Twin Cities YMCA, and Wells Fargo. Finally, you won't find any of these factoids on his resume, but he initially wanted to be a concert musician, and he still plays the bass as a hobby. He is a gardener, and I understand from my wife who ran the Chicago Botanic Garden, he's a very good gardener. He owns a collection of muscle cars, which he takes out on the road periodically. And he and Warren Buffett share the same favorite candy. Most importantly, Richard has been married to his lovely wife, Teresa, for 45 years, and they have 3 adult children and 6 grandchildren. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Davis.
Well, good afternoon. I'm from Scottsdale. Is that okay? Okay, I mean, it's not Florida. I know that. It's the other Florida. Make-A-Wish is headquartered in Phoenix, and that brought me there to this opportunity to tell my story. But before I do, let me just lay claim to this beautiful future we have. I'm going to talk about it. Company, an organization that cares mostly about the future. And we saw 8 examples of the future right here a few minutes ago. These 8 students from these 2 schools here are the embodiment of the future that we want so well to be protected, and the future that we won't be able to live completely and as long as they will, but won't just in their good hands. And Brianna and Gabriella, particularly to you for your involvement with Make-A-Wish and for taking a step into philanthropy at this early age, thank you for making that difference already. And to all 8 of you, the best wishes in your education and the rest of your life. greatest things about America are things that happen that weren't supposed to, the accidental outcome. Make-A-Wish was founded in 1980. It was founded by accident. In fact, it was so accidental, it wasn't even an idea for about 3 years. Turns out that this single mother with a 7-year-old boy, working 2 jobs to make ends meet, moved into an apartment complex, and the next door neighbors were 2 older people who would watch her son after school for a couple of hours each day, kind of adopted him as grandparents. He was a state trooper in Arizona. Chris, the young boy, contracted some form of leukemia, which I'm happy to report today is 94% survivable, and back then in 1980 is 20% survivable. As he progressed quickly through his disease, his mother wanted nothing more than for him to achieve his biggest goal, which is to be a state trooper. And his adopted grandfather was just that. So with days remaining, they mustered everybody together. They sought no permission. They sought forgiveness. 3 state troopers got Chris up into the helicopter, had a full uniform made for him, took him up, deputized him in the office, and he passed 2 days later. End of the story. That's it. 3 or 4 months later, the fire department in the state of Arizona is under the same umbrella as the police department. And a fire person realized that there was a young boy named Bopsy Salazar who somewhere else in Arizona had contracted a different form of cancer. It looked like it was going to be life-shortening. He went to these same few state troopers and said, we want to do something for Bopsy. And Bopsy's goal was to ride in a fire truck and go to Disneyland. So they mustered up a little bit of money, they put together a plan, and they got him to Disneyland where he rode the fire engine down Main Street. He passed within about 2 weeks. No more story. And about a year later, at least a year later, Linda, the mother of Chris, who plays poker, I would never play poker with her. She's a chain-smoking, poker-playing, amazing woman. She and 5 fellas who helped her with Chris's wish were playing poker, and somebody said, why don't we do this on purpose? Why don't we put together a group of people who might want to make wishes come true? And with $37.66, which is folklore in Make-A-Wish land, they went to a bank and opened their account on Monday morning. And that was the beginning of Make-A-Wish, 1980. For 13 years, it was a wonderful charity for children who were soon to pass through the maladies of some very horrible disease. But in 1993, it became the Organization for Critically Ill Children Who Needed Hope. And Gabriella said it beautifully. The Kids for Wish Kids at Seacrest School is not just for kids who are not going to live long. It's for any child who has a very critical disease that could affect their longevity. I'm so happy to report that as of today, 16,000 to 20,000 children a year will be granted a wish in America, and 70 to 72% of them on a given year will graduate to become adults. And only 9% of those children will have a situation that's so compelling that we have to rush the wish, we call it a compassion wish, and get them immediately to achieve whatever it is they need the most. And so the story starts there because it wasn't intended, but it's flourished to become now an international organization in 40 countries, performing between 35 and 40,000 wishes a year, fully funded by private institutions and corporate support. So I would have been compelled by that story, which I learned about during an interview process when I left the bank and decided to go into Make-A-Wish. What I learned after that, so I thought I'd share with you, is this remarkable distinction that needs to be understood about America and its not-for-profits. Alexis de Tocqueville came over almost 200 years ago and founded the Red Cross, maybe the first element of our really formal approach to philanthropy in America. But I'm going to give you guys a homework assignment here when we're done, so pay close attention. There's a binding constraint in America's charities that we can all help with. And it's not intended, but it's an outcome that can be remedied. I want to tell you through a story. Teresa, my wife, and I were members of the University of Minnesota Raptor Center, raptor-like eagles and hawks. And And the Raptor Center is this beautiful organization at the U of M that takes care of, rehabilitates sick and injured birds. Unexpectedly, on a February Saturday afternoon, the phone rings. Now, it's Minneapolis, February. Cool. Phone rings. And it's Dr. Laura from the Raptor Center and says, hey, I'm glad you're home. I wonder if you and Teresa would like to rush down to the cliffs of the St. Croix River, meet up with me, and help us release an eagle back into the wild this afternoon. Well, we have nothing going on, which is sad in its own right, but sure, we're available. And so we rushed to meet her, and she kept calling us, asking us, what time will you arrive? We need to arrive at exactly the same time. There can be no distance between me arriving first, you arriving first. So she was quite compelling. We finally arrived at the same time, I expected this big cage, this big eagle. She came up in a Prius with her husband holding the eagle in his arms. And the eagle's the size, my size. So he gets out of the car quickly. He rushed over to me, and he said, before I hand you the eagle, we need to get right to the edge of the cliff. And he said, because the eagle needs to fly down before he flies up. And by the way, before I hand you the eagle, we'll take off these little glasses that he's wearing to keep him from seeing so that he won't kill you. Now, a mere hour ago, I was sitting in my house on a Saturday morning with nothing to do. So he then choreographs and he says, tell you what, he says, I want you to be as close as you can. He says, Teresa, why don't you just grab his belt loop and hold him so that he doesn't fall? I mean, this is not making this up. I have no fear of heights. Good thing. We grab the eagle. He hands it to me. He says, well, one more thing. He says, count 1,001, 1,002, and watch what happens. And then I'll tell you about it. I said, just give me the bird. Okay, ready? Take off. Off we go. The bird swoops down and takes off. 1,001, 1,002, and just stops. Like a cartoon character, stops dead in his tracks. And then takes off. So I'm now composed. I got myself back together. Teresa had a chance to end it all right there, but she kept holding my belt loop. And I said, so what's the two-second thing? He said, oh, well, that's easy. See, this is a victim of buckshot, and the buckshot causes us to have to take a long time to rehabilitate this bird, including how to fly again. And the way we teach them to fly again is we put them into the tether, and then we would send them out from away and bring them back, and send them out and bring them back. And when they can fly on their own for two full seconds, then we can take off the tether. And he has been so practiced at the two-second mark to stop, knowing he couldn't go any further, this was his opportunity to be free. I love that story because I'm putting it together for two reasons. One is this story is all about America. And the eagle is too good for that. But it's about this tether. Here's what I didn't realize until I became part of the organization called Not For Profits. First of all, it's wrong. It's not a not anything. It's a foreign mission part of our lives. It's so horribly mismarked. There's a for-profit over here is the good stuff, and the not-for-profit is the cute stuff. This is the critical stuff, and this is the nice-to-have stuff. And that is not right. Not right at all. And here's what happens. Number one, we are sitting in this beautiful resort, in this tent, celebrating our freedoms and the love of being part of this great country. Because right this minute, there are a group of other people that are tending to the needs of people we can't see. You think about a mosaic, a fabric, a big quilt, and all the stitching, the invisible stitching, is the not-for-profits in America. Right this minute, there's a company that has raised money and five vans who's driving people to and from their hospital appointments that have no arms or no legs. And these people are devoted to those people to make their life as good as it can be while we get to sit here. And then we have these people who are out here raising money, food, what you've gone through here with the hurricane. The group of people that this morning are celebrating the survivors of the hurricane. I read about it this morning on TV. I watched it. These people are making that their passion, whatever it might be. But it's not nice to have. It's critical. And what's so important about it is we all have been bunching up against these not-for-profits our whole life. But my call to action to all of us is to do something now while you still can. There's no reason to save any of your support for later. I'm your same age. We all have kids. We want to pass down Whatever we've made, whatever we've earned, perhaps that's important to you. But don't put anything into Quests. Knock it off. Decide right now. Give it to somebody you trust who's leading an organization you love. And give them that support, your personal support, your financial support, and your vote of confidence right now. Because they won't have it otherwise. I have never had to plead more than I have for Make-A-Wish. I'm in offices all the time begging for money. I don't mind it, by the way, because the story is so beautiful and brilliant. But I'm begging. And what happens in a case like this is people are interested in the story, but they're not exactly sure they're compelled. So find something that you love. But it's a very interesting dynamic. How many of you serve on not-for-profit boards or for mission boards? Great. Has anybody run one? Okay. Big difference. Board members come and go every 8 weeks, every 12 weeks. Wonderful. Good luck. See you in a month. See you in a quarter. But when you're gone, all the work happens. And this is the hard stuff. First of all, think about who's ever served on a PTA. Anybody? Okay. Church council. Okay. Merge them. That's not-for-profit. Not-for-profit is challenging because you have a different constituency. First of all, your employees. At the bank, or at Medtronic, or at AIG, or companies that are here in the room, employees work for you. They have a mission. They get paid well to do their job, and everyone understands what they're supposed to do. In a not-for-profit, mission-based organization, they're there on purpose with a great deal of intent. And so don't mess with the impact and importance of an employee at a for mission. When I arrived to Make-A-Wish, I actually had to confess the following. My name's Richard Davis. I know I'm an old white guy. And I know I came from for-profit. I think you'll learn to love me. Because the stigma already was, who is this guy coming in from business? Because a high percentage of my 1,200 employees, who had a higher percentage of college education than anyone ahead of the bank, almost everyone of them came to Make-A-Wish or something like it on purpose. They didn't fall into it. In fact, they were fully educated to find out that, you know what? What I want to do with my life is not that. I don't want to make money. I don't want to do capitalist things that are necessarily going to be something that I don't believe in. I want to do it over here. And when you do that, you get this different passion, but you get a different assertion. These are employees who stand up for what they believe in. They're tough, and you can't mess with them. And when things like George Floyd murder happens and you have social justice come along, they have a very strong opinion, and you must join them in listening and taking much longer to make decisions so that it's everyone's decision. That's just the employee side. How about customers? Customers of a company decide whether to stay with you because of your product and your services. But for me, a customer is a benefactor. They need us. These are people whose lives you wouldn't switch places with in many cases who are coming to you saying, can you help me? I can't do something without your help. They need you more than you need them, and that's reverse for profit. And then there are shareholders, the people who invest in you to keep the companies going. This is donors. Zero every morning. Every morning we have no money until we go find someone who will provide some of their good wealth to help our mission come true. And in our case, if we don't find the money, we will let down thousands of young people who have a promise that they're looking forward to. And then lastly, you have your boards. The biggest difference? Paid for over here in corporate America, volunteering over here. What I love the most is some of my best board members worked harder than the paid board members I worked with in my professional life. This was their passion, too. It's not a resume builder. It's not a don't I look good because I'm working there. It's what I care the most about. My time is as precious as anything else I have to give. At Make-A-Wish, there are kids all over the country, as we speak, that aren't feeling well. And in a matter of days, they will go to their doctor. And in some cases, they'll find out they just have to change their diet, or they'll find out something maybe simpler, like even diabetes. We can manage that. But every once in a while, you have your parents' worst nightmare, or on the end of that day, you find out there's something very serious. And it's going to require something very special. And so we count on these medical professionals. Any medical professionals in the room? I want to just thank you for what you do, keeping us alive. You will then say, I'm going to diagnose the situation. I'm going to get the best outcome, I can create a protocol, and I'm going to diagnose the medicine. And then because of Make-A-Wish, the physician says, wait a minute, there's one more medicine, and that's hope. Can I tell you guys what hope is? It's very hard to define, by the way. Hope is that belief that, first of all, anything's possible, and that you're not alone. And so as soon as that child is introduced to Make-A-Wish, they find out a couple of things. One is, we care about you, we love you, we want to help you. And what help looks like for that kid is, what do you want? Wish for anything. Well, I mean, oh, shucks, what do you mean anything? Anything. I mean anything. 19 kids visited the Pope in 2019. That was their goal. We had 32 kids go to the Galapagos in 32 separate trips just before the pandemic. Disney World's a high popular spot. The Super Bowl. People want to meet celebrities. Anything. It's not that, though, guys. It's not the wish. You know what it is? It's their ability to control something for the first time since their diagnosis. Finally, they get to get in control. No one's telling them what to do. No one's limiting their future. Everyone's given a chance to say whatever you want. And then they get to build it. And then they get to look forward to it. And they get to have it. And then they get to look back on it. And what Brianna and Gabriella know, and they have a colleague at their school who is a Make-A-Wish child, and she's doing well and feeling great, by the way, but that young woman knows she's cared for by not only her schoolmates, but by this organization. And that's what hope looks like. So I'll close with this. We've been trying to profess that hope is medicine, and that medicine is clinical and technical, and you can prove it. Can you prove hope? And I want to be careful because I never want to make wish to become a scientific-based organization where we have to spend all of our time proving the metal of hope. I want you to love it for what you do. Example of many. Young girl from Southern California. She has a very complicated disease which precludes her from speaking. Basic tumors, sets of tumors and things disallow her voice from working. So she's been hand gesturing her whole life. It's also a very aggressive disease that could, may well truncate her life. She flies from San Diego to Ohio to see her doctor, who she was starting with when she was a younger child, and she does that routinely. This particular trip, she was headed down to southern Florida to SeaWorld in order to live out her wish. And her wish was to swim with the dolphins and to be part of the backstage, the whole story that goes along with being part of oceanography. The story is she did her trip, met with a doctor, went down, lived the experience. She came back to her doctor to finish her treatments. This is one of many stories I could give you. And the doctor asked her how she was doing, waiting for the hand signals, and she said, I'm feeling really good. And he starts to break out. He's telling the story. He says, she can't speak. There's no reason she should speak. She can't speak. And she smiled and she said, you want to know my dolphin's name? And he tells the story. He went in and he looked at the rest of her situation. And whatever that situation was, had stopped, started turning the corner. We were hearing the story 1 year after her wish. And she was fully rehabilitated from her cancer and moving on to a very normal life. Now, they don't all have that story. My favorite wish, by the way, was a young boy who was unable to ever walk. So he lived in his bedroom in Los Angeles County, which makes no sense if you want to tell you the story. And his bedroom had a big window, and outside the window was a grassy area, which is very rare. And bunnies would jump all around all the time. And he wanted to be a bunny one day because he wanted to jump around like they could, and he could walk. And so his wish was to have a bunny. And all the adults, as typical would be, say, oh, you must want more. It's got to be more than a bunny. I just want a bunny. And after a long conversation, we got him the very best bunny you could buy, with the best cage you've ever seen, with the best food you're ever going to get. And this bunny, as of the day of the speaking, had given him all of the hope he'd ever wanted. And not unlike many other wishes, the hope is the story. But the result is the belief that people care about you and surround you right now. And so I'm asking all of you with business experiences, like I, love the community you live in because of the not-for-profits to keep it safe. Realize the tether. These not-for-profits stop at 2 seconds because we keep pulling them back. Help them cut the tether. Let them move on to be part of the most wonderful part of what makes America great, is this wonderful philanthropy that we all have. We have the beauty of freedom, and we have the beauty of gifts. I'm compelling all of you to continue to think about ways to do it. Support these 8 young people. They are the future. That's why Make-A-Wish stops at 18, because we're investing in futures. And decide, even as you leave here today, is there anything else I can do with my God-given talents, wisdom, support, and financial gifts to embrace and support someone who's making the life here that we can't see so beautiful so that I can do this and convene with my good friends every single day? That's my story. I'm sticking to it. It's a very, very beautiful place to be when you see the hope and the love that people give each other. And thanks for being those people.
You know, I've heard Richard speak many times when he was the CEO of U.S. Bank, and he always spoke passionately about the bank. I've never heard him speak more passionately than I just have. So thank you.
I love it.
All right. A number of questions, but let me start off with one. What is Warren Buffett's favorite candy?
So Warren Buffett is a See's candy. He owns See's candy, so if you're from the West Coast, know it. And you're lucky or you're smart, but on my very first meeting of him, he had a box of See's candy sitting on the table, and I asked him why it was there. Not that he doesn't own See's, but he said, I always have one candy every afternoon. He said, do you like See's candy? I said, I was raised with it. He said, do you have a favorite? And I said, it's the Bordeaux. It's a little milk chocolate, little sprinkles, kind of a buttercream inside. He opens the box, and it's all Bordeaux. And he says, Davis, you're either the luckiest guy or the smartest guy. I don't know which, but I'll leave it at that. And so I accepted that.
There are several along this line. There are so many needy. How did you select your recipients in Make-A-Wish?
You can only come into the Make-A-Wish channel through a doctor prescription, a doctor physician's recommendation. We have a very clear case of what it is that qualifies, and then the doctor will recommend them into the organization. We will have the doctors, we have a core of doctors that oversee it, and you're in your free. Special needs does not include car accidents, does not include diabetes, does not include special needs that you think of. These are people with critical medical events where hope can be as important as the medicine. So.
Please comment on the Silicon Valley bank failure situation. How did that happen so quickly? How systemic is the issue today and in the future?
Great. We talked about whether that should be the whole speech, in fact, but we decided this was a little more interesting. Look, my headline is this. America's banks are very safe. They're so much safer than they were than you even knew last time. The bank that I used to run is probably 5 times more fortress capitalized than it was at the recession that we talked about. You have no worries about a traditional American governed bank. What you have in these two cases are very special circumstances where they had really oversight, lax management on the way they were managing their deposits and liabilities. They had very high risk deposits that could leave at the moment of a phone message, and they had the inability to recover quickly. There's two arguments here. One is that the regulators probably were asleep at the switch on these. They weren't there early enough. Number two, management wasn't paying attention to the good guidance they were getting from the regulators. And number three, the systemic social world that we're in allowed a run on banks to occur. But thank goodness, I'm not naming it, 2 weeks ago on Friday, because we were all worried that a run on banks, which has no science to it, no logic to it, could begin where all of a sudden people would move all their money from banks into money markets in the government, which, by the way, is over $219 billion since the last month. But it's slowed down. It's settling. I give you my word. I'm making a pretty good guess here. Bank earnings will start in 2 weeks. You will see unequivocally the banks are fine. It's not what you hear in the marketplace. It's what you will see in earnings. And for the majority of the banks, which is all but maybe 5 or 6, we're in good shape. So stay pat. Know where your money is at all time. Make sure you trust your advisor. But Silicon Valley Bank will stand as an anomaly, which will change the future course of things, but it won't affect the other banks directly.
During your time leading Make-A-Wish America, what was your favorite or most unique wish?
Well, my favorite moment was, it was pretty simple. My wife and I were in Rome with a couple of friends, and we had the ability to go into the Vatican and the Sistine Chapel after hours, which is fairly unusual. And we had a docent. Her name was Rosa, and Rosa was assigned to us in these 5 couples, so just 10 of us. And as we were wandering through, we were even allowed to take pictures. pictures in the chapel, which you can't normally do. And so I said, let's get a picture of, you know, all 10 of us. And she grabbed her phone to take a picture. And I said, well, before you do, let's use one of our cameras so we don't have to switch it off. She pulls her phone out, and it says Make-A-Wish on her screensaver. Rosa, works in the Vatican, docent of the Pope. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, what's that? She goes, oh, Make-A-Wish. It's the most amazing organization. She starts talking about it. I paused, and I gave her my card, and I said, I'm with Make-A-Wish. And she starts to tear up, and she gives me this hug that never ended. And she says, thank you, thank you, thank you for giving us the privilege of seeing these most amazing young souls come through here and have the impact they have on the Pope. Thank you for the kids' impact on the Pope. And I thought to myself, I was in the job 1 month. That was my best takeaway, Art, because I thought it really is divine in so many ways. And here she was going to explain to me Make-A-Wish, and I had a lot to learn.
Okay, just a few more. Earlier this week, a Sharp Airport man in Omaha looked up the tail numbers of the planes and discovered most belonged to mid-sized banks. What do you think Warren Buffett and the banks talked about?
Interesting. Warren is a sage, and people pay millions of dollars just to have lunch with Warren. But what I will say about Warren is he is the simplest, smartest man I've ever met. He is very simple. He will say to stick to your basics. Don't ever get too sexy. Don't do things you don't understand. And always follow through. And your word is your only bond. And my guess is he's probably helping them both settle their nerves about what to do in a crisis, but also giving them guidance that if you've done what's right and you stick with it, you've done what's right and just stick with it. He's a very simple man, and I'm guessing that they walked away feeling pretty good after meeting. And maybe after a board of
team. All right, two more. How has being a part of Make-A-Wish Foundation changed who you are?
Well, you gave me permission today to come and give you a little bit of that. I love an audience where I can say, God, what didn't I know when I ran the bank? It was like the old first ESG. It was social rightness. Do it because it was right. And I was on all these boards. I really was. But I didn't appreciate how hard it was to make the difference these wonderful people are trying to make without a little more leaning in. So it gave me the chance to tell the story and ask all of us to try a little harder to make this world a little greater because there are for-profits are there. So that, whether I did it or not, I don't know, but that was the one mission I had.
You're a relatively young man, particularly here in Naples.
God, great.
What is next for Richard Davis?
So I'll just close. The answer is I don't know. Art is my witness. It was the Naples Hotel down the street. It was 2014. It was January. It was our board meeting. I took him to breakfast, and I said, I think in about 3 years I should retire as CEO. It will be 10 years because I want to run a not-for-profit. And after he heard that I wasn't kidding, we agreed that we would start the process. He trusted that I meant that much for it. We've got 4 years instead of three. We did it in 11 total. But I have always been compelled to believe that that's where I was supposed to go. And all I'm going to say to you now is I'm waiting to see where that next issue is. I'm a very God-faithful person. I'm not here to preach about it. But I don't know that answer. I don't need to know it right now. I'm fully consumed with both my family and other obligations and have the privilege of being with people like you. Something will come along, and I will be wide open to it. And until it does, I'm okay.
Well, I know we all wish you Godspeed on that journey. And let's give Richard a real hand.
Thank you very much.
Ed, I guess we are officially adjourned.